Why don't we go on then to our next agenda item, which is number 5. And this is the California Men's Colony. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. We have a, this is for administrative civil liability. So as the, since we're having a hearing, you have an opening statement to read.
Okay. This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of administrative civil liability for the California Department of Corrections, California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo County. The order of presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Witnesses called by the board staff. 2. Cross-examination of regional board staff witnesses by the discharger. 3. Witnesses called by the discharger. 4. Cross-examination of discharger's witnesses by regional board staff. 5. Representatives of agencies. 6. Other interested persons. 7. Summation or closing statements by the discharger and regional board staff. Board members and staff counsel may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address, unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. Even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter, please stand. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth? Thank you. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Presenting our staff report today is Matt Thompson.
Good morning, Chairman Young and members of the board. I'm Matt Thompson, presenting item number 5 in your agenda, consideration of administrative civil liability for the California Men's Colony. First, a little background on the facility. California Men's Colony is a state prison located on Highway 1 between San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay in the Chorro Creek and Morro Bay watershed. CMC's wastewater flows west by gravity about 4 miles to its wastewater treatment plant. This wastewater system also serves Cuesta College, the Dairy Creek Golf Course, El Chorro Regional Park, the National Guard's Camp San Luis Obispo, and the County Operational Center. The majority of wastewater flow comes from the California Men's Colony. Approximately 1.2 million gallons per day of wastewater is tertiary treated. A portion of this treated wastewater is used to irrigate the Dairy Creek Golf Course. The remainder is discharged to Chorro Creek, which flows approximately 7 miles before reaching the Morro Bay estuary. Chorro Creek has several sensitive beneficial uses, including municipal and agricultural supply and water contact recreation. Morro Bay also supports several sensitive beneficial uses, including shellfish harvesting. These wastewater facilities are antiquated, some of which were constructed in the 1940s. In response to a previous cleanup and abatement order, CMC just recently completed replacement of its 4-mile-long trunk sewer line and is currently constructing a new wastewater treatment plant. The new plant will be completed in May of 2006. The cost of these improvements is over $20 million. CMC's NPDES permit prohibits bypass and overflow of untreated waste and partially treated waste. It also prohibits introduction of incompatible waste to its wastewater system. And it also prohibits introduction of pollutant-free water, in other words, stormwater, to its system in amounts that threaten compliance with its permit. On February 25, 2004, excessive stormwater inflow to the wastewater collection system caused influent flows to exceed the hydraulic capacity of the wastewater treatment plant. Approximately 10,000 gallons of partially treated wastewater overflowed from the wastewater treatment plant's primary clarifier and trickling filters into Chorro Creek. In response, staff issued a notice of violation on February 27, 2004. The notice of violation provided CMC an opportunity to describe what steps it would take to address the problem. In a March 24, 2004 response, CMC acknowledged that its west facility has an excessive inflow problem, but did not describe steps it would take to address the problem. On October 24, 2004, a severe blockage caused approximately 100,000 gallons of raw sewage to overflow from its trunk sewer into Churro Creek. The blockage was reportedly caused by contraband materials, plastic sheeting, and blankets flushed by CMC inmates. The flushing of these incompatible wastes was the result of relocation of an inmate from a cell block that was not properly roofed when a rainstorm occurred a week prior. Inmates are well known to flush incompatible wastes when they are relocated from their cells, yet CMC apparently did nothing to prevent them from doing so in this case. CMC responded quickly after the overflow was discovered, but the blockage required 3 hours to clear, hence the large volume released. On December 31, 2004, excessive stormwater inflow to the wastewater collection system caused approximately 20,000 gallons of partially treated wastewater to overflow from the wastewater treatment plant's primary clarifier, trickling filters, and secondary clarifier into Churro Creek. On January 7, 2005, excessive stormwater inflow caused approximately 3,000 gallons of raw sewage to overflow from the trunk sewer line into Churro Creek. Again, on January 8, 2005, excessive stormwater inflow caused approximately 60,000 gallons of raw sewage to overflow from the trunk sewer line into Churro Creek. Both of these overflows occurred just upstream of an old and undersized section of trunk sewer line that was constricting flow, which CMC was in the process of replacing. And again, on January 9, 2005, excessive stormwater inflow caused approximately 30,000 gallons of partially treated waste to overflow from the wastewater treatment plant's trickling filters into Churro Creek. All of these spills clearly violated the provisions of CMC's NPDES permit. The February 2004 notice of violation was not effective at getting CMC to aggressively address its excessive inflow problem. Therefore, the executive officer issued a cleanup and abatement order on February 23, 2005. The order requires CMC to identify and eliminate sources of inflow by October 2006 and replace an old and undersized sewer main that contributed to the October 24, 2004 overflow by September of this year. Lastly, the executive officer issued an administrative civil liability complaint on May 8th of this year. I should mention also that CMC had a 20,000-gallon spill on May 2nd of this year that was caused by circumstances similar to the 100,000-gallon spill on October 24, 2004. However, this May 2nd spill is not included in this complaint or the subject order. California Water Code Section 13385 provides civil liabilities of up to $10,000 per day and $10 per gallon for each gallon in excess of 1,000 that is not cleaned up. In this case, the maximum civil liability that may be imposed is $2,230,000. Staff carefully considered all factors required by Section 13385, including those listed here. You may refer to the staff report for a detailed discussion of each of these factors, especially considering CMC's degree of culpability and long history of spills. The ACL complaint recommends assessment of civil liability in the amount of $600,000. CMC submitted written comments on June 15th. These comments are attached to the supplemental sheet, which you should have received earlier this week. CMC highlights its recent efforts to replace its aging sewage treatment, collection and treatment system and prevent sewage spills in the interim. CMC proposes payment of $7,500 of staff costs and that $300,000 be directed to three supplemental environmental projects in lieu of staff's recommended civil liability of $600,000. CMC considered your recent direction to focus supplemental environmental projects on implementation, not planning, and proposed the following supplemental environmental projects: Morro Bay Watershed Riparian Fencing, $80,000. This project includes installation of 1.5 to 3.2 miles of fencing on both sides of Chorro Creek and its tributaries to exclude cattle from the riparian zone. Cattle are a significant source of bacteria in Chorro Creek and Morro Bay. Riparian fencing is a proven method to reduce bacteria and nutrient inputs and enhance riparian vegetation. The Morro Bay National Estuary Program will implement this project, and the California Conservation Corps will provide labor. Other funding sources will provide 33% of the total project cost. This project will be completed by December 1, 2006. Second project is operation and maintenance of a sewage pump-out vessel in Morro Bay, $150,000. Morro Bay Estuary is impaired by bacteria from human sources. The state and federally approved Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan identifies improved pump-out facilities for boaters as a priority to address bacterial pollution. The approved pathogen TMDL for Morro Bay calls for full implementation of the management plan. This project would provide 3 years of staffing, maintenance, and operation of a sewage pump-out vessel that would move among moored vessels in Morro Bay and provides free sewage pump-out services. California Department of Boating and Waterways will provide a $35,000 to $55,000 grant to purchase the pump-out vessel. The project will be administered by the Morro Bay National Estuary Program and implemented by the City of Morro Bay Harbor Department. This project will commence in July 2006 and end in June 2009. Third project is removal of derelict vessels from Morro Bay, $70,000. Several dozen derelict vessels are currently moored or anchored illegally in the Windy Cove area of Morro Bay. Many of these vessels are abandoned and in danger of sinking and threaten water quality and nearby shellfish lease areas. If they sink, the vessels will pose navigation hazards and contribute a variety of pollutants to the estuary. This project involves tracking down and notifying the derelict vessel owners, removing the moorings, towing and hauling out abandoned vessels, and demolishing and disposing of vessels not worth salvaging. Again, Morro Bay National Estuary Program will implement the project, and it will be carried out by the California Department of Fish and Game. This project will be completed by August 2006. Staff supports the proposed supplemental environmental projects. Each of the proposed projects qualify as supplemental environmental projects in accordance with State Board's water quality enforcement policy. The supplemental projects go above and beyond CMC's obligations and are not actions required by any other entity. The supplemental projects will directly benefit water quality in Chorro Creek of Morro Bay, which were affected by the subject violations. Staff supports directing $300,000 to these supplemental environmental projects, but believes decreasing the civil liability amount as CMC has suggested is not appropriate. Staff has carefully reconsidered all factors and believes the recommended civil liability amount of $600,000 remains appropriate. Staff therefore recommends adoption of Administrative Civil Liability Order Number R3-2005-37. To require CMC to direct $300,000 to the supplemental environmental projects I've just described and $300,000 to State Board's cleanup and abatement account. Lastly, I should mention just yesterday we received an email from San Luis Obispo County Department of Environmental Health, Richard Lichtenfels. It says, "We have reviewed the administrative civil liability order for the California Men's Colony and support the recommendation as delineated in the supplemental sheet." At this time, I'd be glad to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Dr. Press.
Thank you for your presentation. I have a couple questions. What happens to the pump-out vessel project after 3 years? Is there a county or state entity that would take it over? I assume the vessel would be paid for, but how about continued operation and maintenance?
The hope is that the momentum with this grant will get the City of Morro Bay Harbor Department to continue funding operation and maintenance.
And has the harbor said anything to that effect, or?
I believe there might be a representative from the Harbor Department that may be able to speak
to
that.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that then. Okay. And then my second question was, you recommended the other $300,000 to be paid to the state board. I always prefer the money to stay at home. Is there, are the three projects that you outlined capable of absorbing more of those funds? So, for example, you know, 1.5 to 3.2 miles of riparian fencing. I assume that number was a number that reflects where there's grazing around Choro Creek, but does it cover all of that area? Could there be more? Could you have more years of pump-out vessel, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes. The two projects that are scalable like that are the pump-out vessel operation and maintenance. You'd obviously get more time with more money. Also, the riparian fencing project, 1.5 to 3.2 miles of riparian corridor will not cover all the area that's in grazing. So, if you directed more money towards that, you get more fencing.
Can those projects absorb all the balance of the $300,000, in your opinion?
Yes.
I think they could.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jeffries.
Just to follow up Dr. Press's questions, and I have some authority since I chair the Moss Landing Harbor District. On the derelict vessel removal, that's not nearly enough. If you're talking approximately $2,000 per unit, and it's stated in our addendum here that you have probably 34 derelict abandoned vessels, it's going to take more than $2,000 to remove those and demolish them. And there's requirements if they have been state or federally licensed previously, there's special action that you have to take on those. And you got to go through small claims court, and there's just a number of steps that you go through. It's just not easy. Just taking a boat out of the water and crushing it up, that doesn't happen. And our experience in Moss Landing, it's been anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 per vessel, and all depends on what size vessel it is. And if there's any contaminants above on board, you have to remove all those. And there's a whole lot of issues that you have to go. So $70,000 is not nearly enough. I would say double it, and it'll be probably close with our experience.
Sure. And there are provisions in the order that if you direct a certain amount to a project and it ends up being less, then they're expected to refund that amount.
Yep.
So I would like to speak to that really quickly, though. In Morro Bay, a lot of the derelict vessels, a lot of the vessels that are moored there, there's about 30 or 32 of them right now. Some of them, the Fish and Game might be able to just run them off. And so the per vessel amount might be more than $2,000, as you've suggested, with the $70,000.
Mr. Chairman, I've got some information on that point.
Go ahead.
If I may. We received a letter, I think it was this morning, and I thought I had enough copies to go around, but I don't, so I'll just go ahead and read it, but it's on this point.
Before you do that, Mr. Chair, the letter was received late, but it's basically comments on the amount of the ACL and comments on whether the $70,000 is adequate. So I don't think anyone would be prejudiced, so I recommend that you allow this in.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
That's right. Now you've seen it. Because we haven't had copies available, I was going to go ahead and read it.
Go ahead.
It's from the Environment and the Public Interest Group, and it's signed by Gordon Hensley, San Luis Obispo Coastkeeper. Addressed to Chair Young. San Luis Obispo Coastkeeper, a program of environment and the public interest, has reviewed the staff report, administrative civil liability order, under consideration by your board today. I'm writing to urge your support of staff's recommendation. Your board is familiar with the long history of sewage spills, and staff has provided you with a detailed analysis identifying a serious and chronic inflow problem. The state knowingly accepted the risk of overflows and resultant penalties associated with this weak link in their system when planning the current upgrade. Unfortunately, that decision has exposed the system to the failures your board is discussing today, and worse, resulted in 200,000 gallons of raw sewage being dumped into Choro Creek and Morro Bay National Estuary. While we understand the unique situation involved in providing services for prison population, the state's informed choice to delay addressing the excessive stormwater inflow problem supports assessment of the maximum liability of $2.23 million. However, based on staff's analysis of the factors considered in determining the civil liability recommended in this and the state's efforts to accept the responsibility as evidenced in the SEPs offered, SLO Coastkeeper supports staff recommendation. We do offer one concern in regard to the SEP proposal for removal of derelict vessels from Morro Bay. Further research since our initial meeting with representatives of CMC and the NEP, National Estuary Program, has indicated that $70,000 may be inadequate for the total project. Our research indicates that the effort necessary to track down and notify derelict vessel owners will require approximately 15 hours per boat. Since there are approximately 40 boats, we estimate 600 hours will be needed for that element, approximately 4 months full-time. Clearly, the time element, coupled with potential legal ramifications of the process, make our original consideration of using interns to conduct this work is unrealistic. We suggest this element alone will require $70,000 to $75,000. Therefore, we recommend consideration be given to increasing the allocation for the Morro Bay Derelict Vessel Removal SEP to $155,000. Again, our compliments to staff for their work and thanks to your board for allocating adequate time and resources for staff to adequately address issues such as this one. Sincerely, Gordon Hensley, San Luis Obispo Coastkeeper.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Shallcross?
Yeah, I have a sort of a procedural question. It seems to me like we're talking about the minutiae and details of a penalty. Have we already ruled that they're liable at all? Is there going to be any evidence that... in a normal case,
the cart's before
you
the
do
horse.
The liability first, and then you look at what the appropriate penalty is, right. And it seems like we're getting bogged down in the penalty part.
We can end this discussion and then go on. If
staff I don't know.
Any other
it's
witnesses? Well, we need to move on to cross-examination of board staff by the discharge and proceed through this. We're just taking opportunity to ask clarifying questions of staff.
Okay.
So... If you'd
I'm
like.
Just confused about
right.
what we were doing.
Well, you're right. We're
because I have questions on the SEP too, but
right.
But if we haven't even gotten to liability, I'm not sure that's appropriate.
Okay.
Time.
All right. Any other questions of Matt before we move on?
I have another comment on the procedure.
Okay.
This SEP proposal is a little unusual because normally either a discharger will come in and contest the liability, or they'll accept the amount of the liability and propose a SEP for the full amount. And in this case, they're proposing a SEP for half the amount plus staff costs. So maybe that's something you want to ask the discharger about. But in terms of increasing the amount of one of the SEPs, the proposal is for $300,000 for these three SEPs, and we don't have the authority to say, no, we want $375,000 worth of SEPs unless the discharger agrees, because it has to be proposed by the discharger. So in terms of how you want to determine the liability versus deal with the SEPs, you could do it all at once, or you can first consider the liability issues and then consider the SEPs after.
So you disagree with the staff's report that says the board is allowed to increase the amount of any, on page 3 of the yellow sheet, it says, this means the regional board has discretion to increase the amount directed to one of the three SEPs proposed by the discharger, but may not direct funds to another project unless the discharger agrees to undertake that project. So you think the staff's statement there is incorrect?
Well, I think that you can't increase it over 300,000 total because that's okay. What they proposed.
Okay.
I don't think the enforcement policy is very clear about shuffling the amounts around.
Okay.
But
just
you can
to
see what the discharger has to
yeah,
say
just
about
to
that.
Clarify
it may not be disputed.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Any other? Dr. Hunter.
I note that in the report, beneficial uses is mentioned in association with Morro Bay, and I'm wondering if we want to mention or incorporate somehow the beneficial uses of Morro Bay Estuary. And in particular, I notice shellfish are mentioned, which is an important operation that's been out there traditionally, but the estuary itself with tidal flow that extends freshwater at different distances from the Back Bay would at some point encounter Choro Creek, the mouth of Choro Creek. And that should then suggest that tidal flow could be also introducing this material back to the estuary proper. I know we have members of the estuary program here, and they may be able to help talk about that a little bit as well. But beneficial uses would then include spawning at grounds and wildlife habitat, and I also don't see water contact and non-contact recreation as beneficial use. So I'm just hope to see those names specifically. Thank you.
Mr. Shalcross.
Yeah, I had a question for Matt. On that phrase, excessive stormwater, is that excessive stormwater because it overwhelmed the system, or is it excessive because it's some unforeseeable large storm event? Why is it excessive, I guess is my question.
Excessive is anything that causes the overflow of the
okay.
collection system.
So, okay,
the December 31st, 2004 spill was an especially intense storm.
Okay. Matt, does staff have any other witnesses it wishes to call?
No.
Okay. Why don't we then allow the discharger to ask any questions of staff? No questions of staff? Okay. And then the discharger can come up and present its case.
Good morning. My name is John Marshall, the warden at CMC, California Men's Colony, Highway 1. I'd like to address the board on a couple of issues. First of all, there's a number of people with me today that will be speaking, and they'll be able to give you some more of the specifics to the ongoing efforts that we're making to rectify the problem. They represent CMC, the state, and Creo engineers. And I also want to apologize for being here today and taking your time up. This is an ongoing problem. We do not dispute the information that's been brought forward, and it's in need of fixing. I've been at the Men's Colony for about a year and a half, so I'm fairly new, and I know it's been going on for a number of years prior to me getting there. Hopefully we'll show that in a year and a half I've been there, we've made a lot of inroads to improving the situation. I take it very seriously, and that's how come I'm here to take the opportunity to address you and let you know that. To give an example, and again, running an institution is not like running other businesses where it has different ramifications, but in May, we locked down a yard, a quad, and it's the same yard that contributed to the problem back in October. Now, when we locked down in May, it's been for 3 months, we're still locked down, we had a racial riot. Now, I took steps that I've never taken before at other prisons. I got 23 years in the department, I worked 5 prisons, and I know just about every prison in the state. And normally, this type of issue isn't something a warden considers when they go into lockdown status. You have an emergency situation, safety and security is the main concern of mine, and plumbing issues in other prisons have not been a factor. I've been in learning curve since I've been here. In May, when we locked down, being educated on these problems, and I had less than a year in at the time, we took some extraordinary measures. Normally, when you lock down after a riot, what you do is you sell feed. Everyone's locked down. You give them two sack lunches. Now, in our meeting to consider how to do this lockdown, I had maintenance and plumbing staff part of our meeting, which is unique in itself, because I knew this would be an issue. How can we safely lock that unit down and minimize inmates contributing to a spill? I will dispute, or maybe that's not the right word, but there was a mention that in May there was another spill contributed to the inmates, and I think that's incorrect. There has not been a spill contributed to inmate activity since the October spill. It hasn't happened since. In this particular lockdown that we're under right now, what we decided to do is to feed the inmates in the dining room according to ethnicity. So all the blacks go together, all the Hispanics go together.
It's supposed to be a test. The property manager notified us we don't need to evacuate, I guess.
Does that mean we're on a lockdown?
I'm used to this. Thank you. And again, I got to consider the safety of the institution and the staff that are doing this. So we decided, and with the extra staff and that goes along with that, that we were going to feed them in the dining room. This is not regular protocol, but I thought it was called for to prevent the inmates, again, rioting in the cells as response to my locking them down, and also give them two sacks a day with plastic wrap and everything for the sandwiches and stuff, a lot of paper that they were probably end up flushing. So we moved them out to the dining room. We give them one sack lunch a day out of necessity, and we go with a clipboard, and we note that we get back every piece of paper we gave them. Every day, every meal, an officer goes down, gets every bag back, and accounts for every sack. This is very unique measures. But through those measures, again, we prevented a spill. I realize it may not be an issue, but there is a cost involved, obviously, with the staffing and the safety issues that went along with it. In fact, we did have one minor fight the first time we fed that way. And I was almost put in a situation where safety being paramount, I was going to have to go to two sack lunches and cross my fingers, but we didn't have to do that. Staff responded appropriately. Inmates have responded appropriately. And we haven't had a spill since. And right now we're still in that lockdown without any problems. And every time we have a lockdown, and when we talk about the progress of the lockdown and coming off the lockdown, which we're progressing towards that, maintenance staff are part of the process. Eventually, I'm going to have to search that unit before I come totally off lockdown. That'll mean locking them down and going and searching every cell. Now, I'm already figuring out how to do that and do it without these guys flushing their contraband, their weapons, everything else, because we're coming to search the cells. It's an element I got to deal with as best I can. So far, I think we've been very successful, and hopefully when that time comes, we'll be successful again, because we do fully appreciate the significance of these spills, and we do have to stop doing it. I mean, we're part of the community, too. Our people live in the areas that are affected, and we have to do something about it. The fact that this, state cut loose and $20, $25 million plants being built, and we've even had the owner of the company come out from Massachusetts on two occasions to oversee that operation. He's due to come back pretty soon, and I've talked to him personally. Also, another concern of mine is CMC is a good neighbor. We contribute a lot to the community. We have outside crews. We do thousands and thousands of dollars of fundraisers for charitable organizations. We have coaches and a lot of people that get involved in the community. And as prisons go, I think we're a pretty good neighbor. The one black eye we have, basically, for me, is this topic. It makes the news. I look on the newspaper, and if it's about CMC, it's about the spillage. And it's not fair to the staff at CMC to be looked upon for that one item. for all the good we do, I don't think we deserve the black eye for, well, we do deserve the black eye, I guess is my thing. We are guilty of doing this, and we got to rectify it for the good of everybody, but also for the staff. We do a lot of good, and I want to really stress that, but I'm not by any means shortchanging this as being a major issue. And when I look at the stats and I see month after month after month and, you know, four warnings in the past, I can appreciate all that. I've done all I can in the year and a half I've been there to rectify it. We put 4.5 miles of line down. We've done a lot of things trying to get on top of this. I think we're really on our way of doing that. We're doing everything we can right now to rectify the situation, both from my standpoint as the daily operation of the prison to the engineers and the people involved in trying to get this plan up. As you know, some of the construction was done pre-World War II. That's just something I inherited. And even the earthquake didn't help anything, I'm sure. So we're doing everything we can, and we do take this very, very seriously. This is part of our discussions at our management meetings about the plumbing issue. We've also cut back on water usage at CMC. Watering the water, length of inmate showers, things of that type we've cut back on, trying to contribute. So whatever comes out of this meeting, I don't think you can do anything that's going to make me try any harder to rectify it or the staff here. And lastly, I want to make sure that I'm not taking all the credit, because that's really unfair. I'm part of the solution. But some of the staff here have been working on this for a couple of years, and their persistence really is what led to this. We're knocking on every door we can, and everybody that our bosses are very aware of what's going on, and they're aware I'm here today. So we're not keeping this a secret. Everybody I can tell knows about CMC's problems with the water. And because of that, I think things are starting to flow a little bit. I'm encouraged by what I've seen the last few months. So with that, I'll open to any questions.
Mr. Marshall, I have a couple of questions for you. With respect to the violations in the report, staff's report, are all of those attributed to what the inmates have done?
Only the big spill in October is the only one that's attributable to the inmates'
activity. The 100,000-gallon spill.
And so, like I say, I, along with other staff, learned from that incident.
Okay, so what is attributed to causing the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other spills, and then the one from May 2nd that staff alluded to?
Okay, I'm going to have to defer that to my staff if I can. They'll give you a better explanation than I would. Is it appropriate to call somebody up?
Yeah, and is that, what's that individual's name?
Okay, there. I got about three people. Okay.
I was going to ask you, before we do that, I have a couple of questions for you. Mm-hmm. Has the legislature appropriated enough funds for your facility to correct your infrastructure problems?
Right now that's ongoing. They have, and that, you know, we paid for the 4.5 mile line. We've got the funding for the construction, the $20 to $25 million for the plant itself. And there are going to be some, now again, I'm getting technical, that probably isn't my area, but after the plant's done, there's still some lines from the plant into the prison that are, you know, that are ongoing. So say we have all the money for everything needed, probably not, to have the funding for everything that we're going to be able to do in the next few months, we do have. And because, again, people have been very forthcoming, I'm very encouraged that we will see it through to its conclusion. But right now, if I had more money, I probably wouldn't be able to use it. But we have so many projects going on towards this endeavor that as we progress, we'll probably add other items to it.
Well, what I would hope to see is that your staff has identified what needs to be done and that someone is on top of trying to get those funds.
Yeah.
We're prepared to speak for that.
Okay, yeah. Good. All right, let's see. And then maybe somebody could tell me about building maybe an emergency ponding system or something that could keep effluent from getting into the creek. So whoever is best able to address that also.
Okay, that'll be addressed during the people following me.
Let's see. Any other board members? Mr. Daniels?
At a previous board mention, I mentioned to staff, as you may know, all these septic treatment facilities, they have to take these extraneous things out of the flow.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have these screening things at the headworks to take out things. And because of your situation, I was recommending that you have screening not only down at the treatment plant, but screening up at the CMC to take it out, or maybe even have a settling basin so that any heavy things could settle out to the bottom and not end up in the flow. And I was wondering, are you thinking of doing those kinds of things as part of your renovations?
Yeah, in fact, as they talked to you and they explained the new plant, the lines are bigger, the way that they grind up the sewage is much more enhanced. So this plant really speaks to a lot of things where it will be able to take If the inmates do act up, the new plant will be able to manage it. It's built anticipating they will. My job is to make them never do it or hopefully minimize it so it won't be an issue regardless. But if they do, on top of this, the water from the rains around here, it kind of sets in, and we're still living just with the rainwater issue and the saturation of that. So,
is this okay. Mr. Parlin?
Yes. Thank you.
We have more technical questions of. We want to ask any other board questions of Mr. Marshall.
I could probably give you some answers with those questions, but I know the people you really need to talk to are
sure,
here. That can be more
Mr.
technical.
So,
in fairness to them, okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Larry Parlin. Address 2500 Venture Oaks Way in Sacramento, California. I work for Corollo Engineers. I've been in front of you folks before on the board, and I, unlike the warden, I have a longer history, so probably a better understanding of some of the issues and difficulties that have gone through. I want to give you a few remarks first, and then I'll give an opportunity to follow up on the questions that you have, and you can get the warden again first if you want. Corollo, we work for a number of prisons throughout the state, so have a good working knowledge of what's going on. I have to tell you, first of all, it's disappointing to be here today for these ongoing spills, and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to see the graph that Mr. Thompson put up there, and it's embarrassing for everyone involved here to see that. I'll acknowledge that. If you look in the original staff report that was put together, you will see some complimentary things about CMC's efforts over time, that have occurred, and I think that's important to realize that. I think you need to know how serious this is considered by CMC. There may have been the impression that this is not a serious issue. This is a very serious issue, and it's also a very serious issue by the Department of Corrections. The folks up in headquarters in Sacramento are attuned to all the infrastructure and wastewater plants, all the prisons in the state right now, and there's good reasons for that. So there are no excuses, but there are some things I want to get into the record here today. And first of all, you know, CMC has taken a lot of actions, not just recently, but even previously, to prevent sewage overflows. Some of you may remember we started this project of planning for a new collection system, trunk line, and wastewater treatment plant back in the early 90s. It took quite a while to get it going. So in that regard, there were improvements that weren't able to be made. But, you know, the rental of equipment, CMC went out and rented equipment and tanks and pumps to capture excess wastewater flows from the prison facilities and discharge that flow later when the flows were down. We would disagree with the supplemental sheet that came in the staff report that said that that effort was not successful in eliminating spills to Choro Creek, because that equipment, most of it was on site for a two-year period. And it did function properly. It did capture excess sewage and discharge it later into the system. That sewage was not allowed to escape into the system. So I think the blanket statement in there that it wasn't successful and therefore shouldn't reduce the liabilities isn't appropriate. Mm-hmm. Now, we acknowledge it wasn't totally successful. We acknowledge there was additional spills, and we've always reported those. But I wanted to make that clear.
Mr. Parlin, yes. If I could ask you just a question,
sure,
about that. Can you estimate how many gallons you think you were able to stop from being discharged into Choro Creek?
You know, I couldn't give you a good estimate without going back and looking at all the flow records, to be honest with you. We haven't quantified that data. And quite honestly, it hadn't really occurred to me to be an issue until I got the supplemental staff sheet late yesterday and saw that statement in there. So it's
well, the penalty is based somewhat
on gallons. Yeah.
And so
each of those Baker tanks was they're 20,000 gallon tanks. And I would say that over the course of the two-year period, they would have had to have been filled at least a dozen times. So there's 24,000 gallons per event right there, 12 times. Now, it's hard to say whether all that would have gone into the creek or not, but it was excess, it was contained, the system worked as it was designed. And I guess
The creek had water in it, I'm sure, during
yes.
that time of year, so
yes, absolutely.
Any spill that reached the creek was going to be unreclaimable.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sure. Go ahead.
Mr. Shallcross?
Yeah. On that same thing, was this machine picking up a
a spill, or was it picking up just stormwater, excess stormwater?
It was picking up from the wastewater, basically where the wastewater leaves the prison. Uh-huh. It was picking up, when the flows would get high, it was picking up the water there and storing it.
Okay, so there wasn't a spill.
There was not a spill.
So there may or may not have been a spill at that point.
That's correct. Okay. And that's why we would disagree with the fact that maybe it wasn't successful at all, because we believe it was successful.
Yeah. And then you said you were using this for 2 years. Is it still being
Yes.
used?
No, it's not there now. Now that the new trunk sewer is completed, uh-huh. and the flow can flow down that sewer line, it's not necessary, because it was caused by undersizing the original line. Another item that was mentioned in there is the sewer jetter truck. CMC purchased that for collection system maintenance back in 1996. It was about $260,000. All the other institutions in the state of California don't have that kind of equipment, and that's a credit to the fact they were able to get that to do sewer maintenance. They continue to do annual maintenance of berms. They understand where the hot spots are, where the potential overflows are, or were, I guess, with the old undersized trunk line. And so they would go out there annually, make sure the berms were in place to do these protections against any spill reaching the creek. Yes, there would be an overflow, but the goal was to keep it away from the creek. They've done a tremendous amount of staff training there of all the institutions. The warden mentioned some custody issues, and custody is a real difficult thing to do. They've gotten together the operations people from the wastewater. They've gotten together the maintenance staff from the physical facilities and the custody people, and got procedures in place now to respond properly, to think about sewage, not just inmate problems. That's their way ahead of the curve over other institutions there. And, of course, everybody's previously mentioned the new trunk line and the cost for the treatment plant. I want to remind you again, you read the newspaper, you watch TV anywhere in the state of California, and you'll see the budget system here is broken, okay? Now, I'll remind you again that CMC is not a city, they're not a utility, they can't go sell a bond to make improvements and then roll it back into the ratepayers. They have no ratepayers. Everybody in the state's a ratepayer, effectively, but that slows the process way down. All their funding has to come through the legislature, Department of Finance, has to compete against every other program in the Department of Corrections and the state. And I think they've done a remarkable job of getting what's in the works so far. So I would ask you to consider that and the ability of them to raise funding. An additional action item that's being taken now, based on a meeting with Mr. Thompson and other users of the CMC system, that being the National Guard, the county, Cuesta College. There's an infiltration inflow study that's going on right now. Most of the TVing work is complete. We're going out TVing all the collection system sewer lines where we think the worst problems may be. Going to identify projects, put in a report. Hopefully we'll get, here's the project list, here's the repairs we need to make, here's the costs. A significant effort on the part of CMC, and then that goes into the state for funding, and it's really... it goes into the black hole there. So a lot of effort is being expended, but a lot of it is not under the control of the institution. But the work has been done and continues to be done. One of the reasons this is taken so seriously, not just environmentally by Department of Corrections now, but not just at CMC, but throughout the whole state, is they basically enlisted the services of legal counsel to help go through the funding process, identify the problems, work with regulators, get projects funded. And Chris Swanberg, who will be speaking to you shortly, is that person. And I've worked with Chris at some other institutions, and it's been a real benefit, and it's been a real good thing for the Department of Corrections to do that, and it helps the folks here at CMC get some support from headquarters. But once again, things can only happen so fast dependent on the funding. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, or we can call us back later.
Okay. Board questions? Okay. What do you anticipate, then, is the time frame for when you are going to know what your facility needs to be upgraded and to get all this behind you?
We would hope that we would, by the end of August, we would have the projects identified and costed out.
This August.
This August. That's our hope at this point in time. Now, we have to, you know, I can't speak for the National Guard. They're a contributor, and we're not sure to what extent. The County of San Luis Obispo has a project that they're doing right now, and then Cuesta College is a contributor as well. So we can't really speak for those folks. We're working with them, but they have different funding mechanisms, too.
Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, Mr. Daniels.
When was the new trunk line put in service?
Actually in February of this year, late February.
Okay. And maybe you could explain the reason for this May 2nd overflow, if the brand-new trunk line has been in place.
If I'm not mistaken, that was as a result of the there's new equipment. What you did mention earlier about upstream equipment. There's screening stations upstream. Actually, as it leaves each prison facility, there's new screening stations.
Good.
And there was a problem with the equipment manufacturer that resulted in blockage of that equipment. It's since been sent back to the factory, and it's under warranty, and the contractor has worked on that.
But so the spill took place at the prison.
Yes, right? Yeah. Okay. And we do have, like I said, we do have the screening there. There's screening down at the other facility as well, screening and grinding. So.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Can we hear from Mr. Swanberg?
Thank you. Good morning. Chris Swanberg. I'm from the newly minted California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. We changed our name July 1st, and I am with the Office of the General Counsel, which was also changed July 1st. My address is 1515 S Street, room 314 South, Sacramento, California. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. While they're fresh on my mind, I kind of wanted to address a couple of things. The proposed order has a suggested funding date of September 7th of this year for both the any ACL that's designated to the state cleanup fund as well as any special environmental project. That's just simply not a date that we can meet here at the state. We don't even have a budget right now. Whether we'll even have a budget by September 7th is questionable, the way things go under the dome. I would only point out that we have done a previous special environmental projects, and it is successful. It's being done under the auspices of the Delta Keeper up in Tracy, California, and is being overseen by the Central Board. They gave us 9 months, and quite frankly, that's a much more realistic process and timetable for us. That's also a very realistic timetable for our proposed special environmental projects. But I just wanted to raise that because that's a date right out of the chute that I can tell you we can move heaven and earth and it wouldn't happen. There was a question about the legislature. I had a meeting. I came to CDC 2 years ago after 26 years in private practice, and a good portion of what I did was wastewater and water. I was the president of a water and sewer district on the side for almost a decade. So I have some familiarity. And there were a number of things that just were broken at CDC, in my estimation, and one is that we had not centralized the oversight of what was an aging infrastructure, and as the institutions would ask for help, it would get redlined out, very often by the very legislature that had enacted the laws that required these fixes to be made. It was kind of Orwellian. We are correcting that. We are now making an effort centrally. I met with the legislative analysts in the Department of Finance just this last week to discuss cost drivers for capital outlay to meet standards that are imposed throughout the state where we haven't been. I'm very encouraged that we're going to get funding in the future for not only this institution, but for many of our other institutions that have these problems. But we're here today to talk about this institution in particular. Let me talk very briefly about the penalty assessment, because I think your counsel is quite correct. We need to talk penalty assessment, and then at that point in time, see what we as the discharger want to do in terms of special environmental projects. Parenthetically, let me say that before I came on board, we had never done a special environmental project. We had the checkbook mentality, where we just showed up with the checkbook or just accepted the order and wrote the check. That's not a good way to do business for any one of a number of reasons. It doesn't help do anything to mitigate the environmental degradation that you may have caused. It doesn't do anything to help the community work with you or for you to partner with environmental groups to not only do the former but to also possibly assist, get assistance with the legislature and other places to get funding to do these things. And we're starting to do special environmental projects, and that is our desire. When we got this complaint, The very first thing I did was to drive down here to Morro Bay. I met with Dan Berman from the National Estuary Project. I met with Brian Stark from the Friends of the Estuary. I met with Gordon Hensley from the Coast Keeper, and discussed what we might possibly be able to do in special environmental projects that would meet our goals to be both have the geographical nexus, the causation nexus. If it's a sewer spill and it's pathogen related, then let's work on pathogen loading issues. I discovered that there were possibilities in the past where the shellfish harvest may have been impacted by our spills, not any of the ones that we're talking about here, because I believe for the last year the bacterial counts in the bay have precluded some of the oyster harvesting, for example. But so I wanted to make sure we did something to address that and to help those people as well. And we've come up with a list of projects that I feel very good about. I looked at the $600,000 penalty assessment, and there were two things about that that struck me. One, it was difficult to break down exactly what event came up with what dollar figure. So I just had to look at the largest event, the one that occurred last fall, and assume that that was a very large cost driver. After that event happened, we came down here, we met with the board staff and explained to the board staff what had happened, and it tried to explain why it was really somewhat unpreventable. It occurred on a weekend when we were short-staffed. The suggestion has been made, well, why didn't you just turn off the water? We can't do that. And the reason we can't do that is if you just simply shut off the main water, you literally have to evacuate the entire institution in order to bring it back up block by block. If you take it down too quickly, you may lose the entire system. Even if you just shut down one block, the rest of the system may fail. It can be done, but it takes a lot of time and a lot of manpower that wasn't available on a weekend and wasn't available because we had a chief medical officer who had a medical concern about toxic mold, possibly, and people who were having respiratory difficulties, and we were told to move those inmates now. And we did that. Unfortunately, the inmates retaliated. And frankly, as I told the staff then, if you impose a significant ACL, the inmates will have won their battle. And I found it interesting that the staff has been very good to deal with. They listened to us, and what came as a result of that 100,000-gallon spill was a cleanup and abatement order. Now, as a result of a few other spills that were not only contributed to by us, but probably some of the other system users, some of which were as a result of extraordinary rainfall events, we've now turned around and said, gee, this is a serious violation and should be a significant component of the ACL. I think the very same analysis that was agreeable back in January when we met with your staff still holds today.
Are you suggesting that somehow the issuance of the cleanup and abatement order
You clearly still have the right when you've issued a CAO to go ahead and impose an ACL, and I understand that. But the fact that the board considered what had happened at that point and felt a CAO was an appropriate response, I think does bear consideration in this mix in trying to determine the ultimate ACL to be imposed. As a result, I came down here and met with these folks, as I've indicated. Largely through their assistance came up with these special environmental projects. Proposed a funding of those projects in the amount of $300,000. Now, I did not direct that this much for this one or this much for that one. I just said, you got $300,000, $100,000, however it works out. Dan Berman has done an excellent job of coming up with costing on these, and I think can probably address some of the questions that you have about the special environmental projects in more detail than I can. CDC is not averse to doing something to increase the amount of funding. If the ACL ultimately is to be something higher than 300, we would like the opportunity to address what we might be willing to do. The costing of these three SEPs, based on the proposals put forth by Dan, is about $450,000. I'll tell you right now, I don't know where the money's going to come from. I'm going to have to do something to get the money, whatever that amount of money is. We feel that a $300,000 ACL assessment to be replaced by SEPs is, given all the facts and circumstances and given what we've been trying to do and given the history, that the most recent history, is an appropriate response and an appropriate order for this board to make, and we would request that that be the order. Thank you. I'll answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Any questions by the board? Okay.
Thank
you very much. All right. Why don't we move on?
I just have a quick comment about the payment date.
Yes.
The board has discretion about when to require the payment for the SEPs, but for any amounts that are actually going to the cleanup and abatement account, there's a statutory requirement that those amounts be paid, due and payable in 30 days. So actually the September 7th date for that aspect of the payment, if there is going to be one, needs to be changed to August 6th. Obviously, the board has discretion if there's no budget about what to do, if anything, about holding the discharger to that date, but the order has to include that August 6th date for any non-set payments.
And that raises a good point. I noticed that the proposed order did not include an ability on the part of this board to extend a date if something were to necessitate that extension due to no fault of the discharger. If that's not included, I don't believe this board has the right to come back once you've made your final order. I think my remedy then is to go to the state board, and I would request that you insert such a provision in the order to reserve that right to yourself should that be the necessary case.
It's already in there.
Oh, I didn't happen to see it.
Yeah, the order says, upon request of the discharger, the executive officer or the water board may extend any of these due dates. Those are the due dates for the SEPs. If the delays are beyond the discharger's reasonable control,
okay,
and
I guess,
hereby reserves jurisdiction.
I guess I just overread that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to whether staff wants to question the discharger's witnesses. Mr. Thompson? No? Okay. Any comments by representatives of any other agencies? Okay, why don't we have Betty Winholtz, and then we will have Dan Berman.
Good morning. My name is Betty Winholtz. I am on the City Council of the City of Morro Bay. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. I came here primarily to entice you into thinking about that balance of $300,000 that's slated to go to the state. I would suggest to you that the damage, besides the estuary that is downstream from CMC, so is the city of Morro Bay downstream, and we also feel the effect of the discharges that have happened from that facility. What comes out Chora Creek has to go through the estuary, comes through our Embarcadero Bay area, and goes out to the ocean by us, so it's very much inside of our city limits. So I would suggest that another possible SEP project could be a contribution of whatever balance there may be up to the $600,000, that be attributable to the project that the JPA, the Joint Powers Agreement between Cayucas and Morro Bay, is engaging in to get rid of their waiver. You know we're not going to ask for that waiver again. You know that we're going to try to, not try, that we will get to secondary treatment, and we've made that proposal. What I'm suggesting, though, that is extra and supplementally environmental beyond that is that the city of Morro Bay has stated publicly it's committed to going tertiary and beyond that to reclamation. Cayucas has not committed to that, and, of course, there will have to be some negotiation. So what I'm suggesting is that you could get us out of the ocean by helping us find money, some of which would be from here, to go to a tertiary reclamation project, recharge the Chora Valley, get our pollution out of the bay and the ocean, and in a sense be a win-win situation. We would no longer be like a thorn for you asking for waivers, but we would become like a star in your crown because we have made this leap going beyond the secondary to the tertiary reclamation. I think in addition, certainly the let me just clarify, I'm not speaking for the City Council of Morro Bay, I am speaking as a council member. I'm sure that my council member cohorts would agree with me, however, because we're looking for money. The other thing I would say beyond that is, I'm forgetting, so let me just add my last thought. And it has to do separate from this request for money for going tertiary and reclamation. $2,300,000 is a lot of money. $600,000 is only 25%. It's just a token amount of that your staff has suggested. I would suggest to reduce that down to the $300,000 becomes just a drop in the bucket. And though And I appreciate that CMC is making tremendous strides in trying to correct the situation. The city and those of us who are their neighbors downstream have lived with this for a number of years, and I believe that the $600,000 is a good number to go ahead and find them with. Thank you.
Are they usually a good neighbor?
You know that we do.
They do a lot of community outreach and things like that.
Where I see the CMC people is when they come down, when we've hired them to come and do some when our creek overflows, sometimes they'll come down and help us clean up the creeks. They'll do abatement, weed abatement type things, and those are where I see them helping.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I actually have a question.
Dr. Press.
Are you suggesting that hypothetically, if the discharger agreed to it, that the balance of the staff's recommended $300,000 be directed to a SEP, that SEP being some step along the way to tertiary and reclamation for your city, is it to sort of follow up with your metaphor, isn't that a drop in the bucket for a project of that magnitude? I mean, $300,000 wouldn't, what would that really do to move you towards tertiary? I mean, it probably wouldn't barely fund the planning studies.
We've been told it's going to cost around $14 million,
right.
And it will be, I think, an extra $4 million to go tertiary, and then that's not even including reclamation.
Yeah.
What it would do is that because Cayucas is reluctant to come along, if we can show them that there is money and that this is just the beginning of money, we can entice them to come with us to go the full step. We don't want to stop at secondary. We want to be the tertiary reclamation, be the example for the coast. And $300,000 is not a great deal of money, but it is the beginning. They need to see that it's possible. And I think you would give us that spark and that hope to make it possible.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I just, the part that I forgot that I wanted to add is I do, and this council does support the other projects, certainly, that have been proposed, and that what I'm suggesting would be beyond that.
I just have a clarifying question for you. So the money you're interested in is to get the facility to tertiary?
Yes.
Not to secondary?
Right, because we
okay.
know we have to do that anyway, so we're trying to go beyond that to do something exceptional.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Dan Berman?
Chairman Young, members of the board, my name is Dan Berman. I'm the director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. We're a collaborative effort of agencies like yourselves, local citizens, businesses, volunteers, working to protect and restore the Morro Bay estuary and watershed. I wanted to speak to two issues. One is the amount of the ACL, and the second is the proposed supplemental environmental projects. In terms of the amount, the estuary program supports staff's recommendation of a $600,000 assessment for three primary reasons. One is simply the severity of the spills that have occurred. It's an extreme insult to a system that's already degraded. We already are impaired waters, Truro Creek and the Bay, for pathogens and nutrients. There's TMDLs in place, and so adding over 100,000 gallons, 200,000 gallons of raw sewage and partially treated sewage on top of that is something that this national estuary does not need. Secondly, there's a long history of similar violations. And finally, I think it's important for the board to set a precedent for all the wastewater treatment facilities in your region that violations of this severity and continuing over the length of time that we've seen them here are something that are going to result in serious penalties and that would be an incentive for folks to do the right thing. I would like to commend the CMC both for their interest in supplemental environmental projects, for the new plant that's being constructed, the new trunk line to it that's already in place. We're very hopeful that that's going to reduce future spills, and we know that the new plant is going to improve water quality in the creek and the bay by reducing the nutrient levels of the effluent. And then on the SEPs, I think Matt did a great job of summarizing them and the information in the staff report. I guess I'd like to answer any more detailed questions that you have, some of which were coming up earlier about them, and to mention that Dean Heilman is a supervising warden for the Department of Fish and Game and is responsible for the Morro Bay estuary. He is here to answer any specific questions about the derelict vessel removal, because that's a project that's under the jurisdiction of Fish and Game. And Susan Lichtenbaum of the Morro Bay Harbor Department can speak to the discussions we've had with them about the pump-out vessel, because that's something we would do in partnership with the city of Morro Bay. I know there were some specific questions earlier, one about the cost for the derelict vessels. There's a lot of unknowns. We know there's about 36 boats out there. We don't know how many of them are truly abandoned. We're hopeful that when Fish and Game starts notifying people and letting people know, and they have the option to threaten citations for violation because legally none of the boats are supposed to be there, we're hopeful that many of the owners will simply elect to remove their boat and it will be largely free. We know that there are some boats that are totally abandoned. It's actually difficult at this point to assess how many of them there are. And there can be a very expensive legal process to notify and just go through all the paperwork associated with addressing those boats. So I think the costs are going to vary really widely, and we came up with kind of a ballpark number, I think, of around, for an abandoned boat, at least $1,500, $2,000 just for the tracking and registration work, and then probably an equivalent amount to deal with disposal. How many of the boats we're going to need to do that with, we're not sure. And so in the end, we would be reporting back to you on what the actual costs were by the different boats. And of course, if there's unexpended funds, that would be fine. I think that, Mr. Shellcross, you're probably correct that more funds may be needed for this project. And this is something the estuary program has had in our action plan as a priority thing to deal with for, well, 5 years now since our action plan was done. But it's a situation that's existed in the Bay for 20 years. I think you've probably heard about it before.
Any other comments? Your time's up. If you could wrap it up, that would be great.
Thank you very much for your consideration of this matter. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
We may have questions later about the SEPs once we get to that point.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next we are going to, well, any other members of the audience representing an agency that wishes to address us? No, agencies. Then we'll go to other interested persons. Okay. Andrew Christie, followed by Kira Fothery, and then David Nelson.
Mr. Christie left the room.
Do you know if he's coming back? You
know, I do know that he is not coming back.
He's not coming back. Okay. Kira Fothery, and excuse me for mispronouncing your name.
No, that's right. Yeah, it's Fothery.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. My name is Kira Fothery. I'm from the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. I would like to express my support of the staff's recommendations. We have faxed in our comment letter that was read earlier, and I also have some copies with me. Since the letter was read out loud earlier, I will keep my comments brief. But I would like to reiterate that the inaccuracies of the original estimate of $70,000 for the derelict boat removal SEP. We spoke with sister waterkeeper organizations and the City of Morro Bay Harbor Department. We learned that the appropriate estimate of time per boat is an average of 15 hours. And that could vary. That's also much higher than we originally thought and creates a period of closer to 6 to 9 months to complete the first task of getting vessels numbers and notifying the owners. With that said, the December 31st, 2005 completion date for the first task is unrealistic. But however, due to the spacing of the other tasks, we believe that the rest of the project can remain on schedule. I'd also like to point out that there was a typo on the copy that was read today, and the correct number is $145,000. I have copies here if you'd like that.
Okay. You could pass that to Ms. Hewitt.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions? by the board. All right, thank you very much. David Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Young, other commissioners. Thanks for allowing me to speak here. I'm here because I care about Morrow Bay. I care about our estuary. And what we have here is a really, really bad problem. And I've heard a lot of excuses and why they're taking steps to improve it. But in your staff report and the prior history, I hope everybody's really looked at that really closely. 260 sewer spills since 1990. An average of 3 a month in the last few years. There's just no reason for this. It's a really small fine that you're imposing when you look at the overall cumulative effect of this on our estuary. And we can't tell what the cumulative effects are because we don't get the proper studies. I don't know what the proper studies are, and I'm sure many of you don't, but we've got to address this, and I thank Mr. Press for calling for the extra money to stay in Morrow Bay to look after these problems. I think, you know, a lot of the money should go for research, but the main thing I am here to say is that the $600,000 just isn't a big enough fine for this. I mean, you're only really fining them for the last few years. You're not even going back to 1990, which, you know, everybody had an excuse why it happened. But this is a huge, you know, they should be charged for the 260 spills. I mean, you let them, you know, upgrade, and they've missed deadlines for their upgrades. And I know there's always reasons for that, but until you step up and make it not profitable to do this or make it hurt. I know it's really tough when you're finding yourself, and that's what we're doing. I mean, when you find them, you're finding us. We're the taxpayer. But somewhere, somebody's got to be held responsible, and money seems to be the only responsibility that shows any effect on anybody. So I'm just saying that $600,000 is way too low. And I think letting them off with $600,000 is a slap on the wrist for a really serious group of violations. I mean, this prison has expanded enormously since 1990. Nobody's asked them what the population is supposed to be. Does anybody know what the population is? I mean, this is a foreseeable problem that existed there. I mean, it's been going on since 1990, and a lot of it's because of overflow. A lot of it's because of overcrowding. So, you know, to give them a slap on the wrist and to pull out some boats and do this other work is, you know, not equal to the crime that they've committed. And it is a crime. I mean, this is killing my estuary. I mean, I've been fighting for this estuary for a long time, and I really think that this board needs to step up and make it hurt when somebody hurts it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Any questions of Mr. Nelson? Okay. Any other member of the public wish to address us on this issue? Okay. Mr. Briggs, why don't we go to summation or closing statements by the discharger and board staff?
I think Harvey and Matt have a couple of things to say, and then I might have something to add.
Excuse me. We're fully aware of all the efforts CMC has taken to address its sewage spills and installing auxiliary equipment and building a new trunk sewer line and wastewater treatment plant. We considered all of that when we recommended the initial liability amount of $600,000. Furthermore, we haven't heard anything today that I think justifies a change in the penalty amount. We believe that the $600,000 amount is probably the only way to get CMC's attention, and we would ask CMC to direct the additional or the balance of $300,000 to supplemental environmental projects rather than directing it to the State Board's cleanup and abatement account.
Could you comment, Matt, on the appropriateness of allocating money to a upgrade of a plant from secondary to tertiary treatment whether that would even fall into an allowable category?
Well, it would qualify as a supplemental environmental project because it is above and beyond the obligations of CMC. Whether it's the most appropriate project, I couldn't say. There's a lot of projects that kind of money could be directed to. I agree that Morro Bay could use a boost to get Cayucas to agree to go tertiary, but other projects include such as one that was thrown on the table was low-income hookup assistance for folks in Los Osos. I mean, so there's plenty of good supplemental environmental projects out there. I think the trick is going to be to convince CMC to agree to it.
Okay. Any questions of Matt? Mr. Brick, did you want to add to staff's closing comments?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, as we've heard from staff counsel Lori Oaken, it's up to the discharger to propose any increase from what they've already offered as a reasonable settlement of the amount in terms of the supplemental environmental projects. So I think there'd have to be an opportunity for them to do that. And as our counsel said, this is actually a little bit of an unusual proceeding in that we have an offer of a supplemental environmental project on the table, but it is not for settlement of the staff recommendation in full. So we have a discrepancy there. And so maybe in light of that unusual aspect of this proceeding, the board should probably deliberate in terms of the appropriate amount of liability. And then as a secondary matter, and I think this is what Board Member Shawcross was also alluding to, as a secondary matter, then take up the the issue of if there is, in fact, an issue of any balance. So that's my suggestion for how to proceed. On another point regarding some specific testimony that you heard, Mr. Swanberg, I believe it is, said that when he looked at the way that this came about, he concluded that that our staff felt that an appropriate response to the 100,000-gallon spill was a cleanup or abatement order, and then it appeared to him that later on smaller spills prompted an administrative civil liability. And that's not the case. We considered what the appropriate enforcement actions were all at the same time. And our conclusion was that we needed to have a cleanup or abatement order, which is our enforcement tool for directing the discharger to make improvements that are needed, that is, improvements for going forward to make sure or try to ensure that these kind of violations don't happen anymore. And you heard about from Mr. Parlin about the infiltration inflow work that they have underway now. That's in direct response to the cleanup or abatement order. At the same time, the same discussion, we said we need to have an enforcement action that addresses the spills that already happened. That's the administrative civil liability actions before you today. The cleanup or abatement order is an administrative action that I took with my authority that's granted by the regional board to do that without having a board hearing. I can do that faster than we can issue even the complaint for administrative civil liability. So it was simply a matter of how long it took to go forward once we made the decision with the cleanup or abatement order and an administrative civil liability complaint. That's the only difference. And so the administrative civil liability complaint is for all the spills that Mr. Thompson mentioned that are part of the record. And we did, in fact, take into account the extended history of spills even prior to the ones that Mr. Thompson mentioned in deciding that this should be among the highest penalty amounts that we've proposed for any similar kind of cases. So it's not the highest, but it is among the highest, and I'd say that's primarily because of the history of spills, which you've heard some comments about already. Also, I'd want to remind the board that you do have options, as you always do with an administrative civil liability, where we don't have a mandatory minimum penalty. This is not a mandatory minimum penalty. So you can increase the amount up to the maximum that is has been calculated for this for these spills. You can decrease the amount all the way down to zero, which would be dismissing the complaint. You can also, within those two options, well, third option is leaving it the same, but within those three options, you also have the opportunity to suspend a portion of the penalty. And typically when the board has done that in the past, the suspension has been based on the discharge of performing certain functions. And we do have, as I said, in the cleanup or abatement order, we have certain functions or certain tasks that the discharger is responsible to proceed with, having to do with their getting a fix for the infiltration and inflow problems. So I just want to remind you that you have that option. Also, a slight modification of what Mr. Thompson recommended, and that is that we do have to allocate the $7,500 towards the cleanup or abatement account regardless because of the staff cost calculation.
Okay. Mr. Marshall, it's your agency's opportunity to provide some closing comments to us.
I hope you don't mind if I take the opportunity here, because I want to address the issue of the penalty and the associated SEP amounts. This is an unusual situation, and in fact it's very unusual for CDCR, as we now are called, to even propose SEPs. And I can tell you very plainly that not everybody within the hierarchy of management believes in the concept, because they feel it sets a bad precedent that when you walk in and you open your pocketbook and you start spending money in local communities for special environmental projects, it only encourages additional fines, larger fines, and an increased in awareness of a source of money to pay for those environmental projects. I don't share that view. I worked very hard. I spent a lot of time going through the National Estuary Plan, which is about 6 inches thick. I thought very, very long about what had happened, both in the short period of time that we're talking about here, as well as in the much longer period of time, the harm and the environmental degradation that we had done. And these projects were picked very carefully. CDC is not prepared to, at this point in time, propose additional projects on an ad hoc basis. We want to stay with these projects. We are willing to fund these projects in their entirety. We feel that these projects have a very strong nexus to the environmental degradation and harm that we've caused over time. We would like to see these projects carried through. We're not prepared to extend the pump-out vessel beyond 3 years. There may be some legal requirements that we face that would prevent us from doing that in any event, but we are willing to consider funding those to the full extent of what's required for those. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from your agency?
Did you want to make a comment?
I just want, in closing, say, you know, I've heard a few comments that CMC, we have to get our attention, that the money or the fine, whatever's handed down, is in order to get our attention. I think through all the efforts that we described today, you have our attention. I think we're doing everything we can do. The fact we have passed bills, we're not disputing that. We do have passed bills. If we're to be penalized for that, then that's the reason. But hopefully it's not because you need to get our attention. Hopefully we proved to you that we're sincere about what we're saying. We're making a lot of strides. I'm really encouraged by the last year of where we've gone to. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, that ends this part of the proceeding. We can then go to board discussion.
One
go ahead.
I apparently said that the $7,500 calculated staff cost has to go to the cleanup or abatement account. I am told by the person to my left that it doesn't absolutely have to, but it always has gone to the cleanup or abatement account.
Okay, let's bring it to the board now. Dr. Press. And you know, before we start this, I might to share with you a thought I have. You know, perhaps what we need to do is decide first about the size of the fine as a first step. And then as a second step, we can come back. You know, if it's in excess of the 300, then I think we need to give them time to decide how that extra amount is going to be allocated. I don't want to get into that here. It's not appropriate. Okay. And so we might think of worrying about the fine first and then what to do and follow up to that and maybe bring that back at the next board meeting.
Our chair is trying to hurt us.
Well, I'm trying to streamline us so that we don't spin ourselves. Go ahead, Dr. Press.
Based on what I've heard today, I think that the staff's recommendation of $600,000 is the appropriate amount. I think that I'm not moved to conclude that it is a slap on the wrist or a token amount. I think it's a significant amount. At the same time, I don't at this moment think that it's appropriate to offer suspension of any of that amount based on some milestones. I think that the discharger is already doing what they're supposed to do. They're well underway. So it makes it less logical to have some sort of suspension here. So if we're just talking about the amount of the penalty, I would stick with the staff's recommendation. I think that the record supports it quite well.
Okay, we'll just go down the line. Mr. Daniels?
I agree with Dr. Press. I think this is a reasonable amount. I mean, given the long history of these kinds of problems, I think the other thing we need to look at, this is not just simply getting their attention. This really does set a precedence. I mean, every time we have these, they always point out, well, here's a case where you had less, and here's a case where you had even less than that, and it's to get, you know, all dischargers' attention. So I think that's an important thing to think about, is that, you know, it's clear that we have your attention and that you're doing good things, and we applaud that, and you know, hopefully we'll never see you again. That would be great. But, you know, we need to set a standard we think is appropriate for this just in general. And I think I agree that $600,000 sounds like an appropriate amount for this kind of spill. And we were looking in, for example, at the Hollister cases, and, you know, that was, I think, $600,000 plus another $600,000 deferred, and that was essentially for already treated sewage. Much of the sewage here has been, you know, raw sewage, completely untreated going into the stream. So I think that needs to be thought about, too.
Mr. Shawcross.
I can go along with the $600,000. I think it's the low end of reasonable, given the history of this institution. Yeah, we got your attention, you know, 15 years too late, really. Sort of reminds me of the guy who hits you over the head with a hammer for 15 years and then takes credit for curing your headache when he stops. But $600,000 sounds fine, and I would like to see it all go to a SEP that maybe they can work out later.
Okay. Mr. Jeffers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I disagree with my colleagues. When I first read this report, I thought the appropriate amount was $1.5 million. I've been on this board since 1992, and not to be disrespectful to the warden that's here today, and I'm sure he's trying the best, but I've heard this before since 1992. And all the previous wardens and associate wardens and staff that have been here and have testified in front of this board have said basically the same thing that you've said. And, you know, I'd like to send a message. Yes, you're right. You know, this is taxpayers' money. And it really galls me that we have another state entity that we have to put this type of dollar amount against, because all we're doing is taking away from another program or another project that's dearly needed within the state of California. This institution has had a long, long history and a multitude of problems. And I appreciate your comments that you're working to resolve these finally. And I appreciate that very much. But again, with my long tenure on this board and the long tenure of problems at that institution, I really feel the appropriate amount is $1.5 million.
Okay. Dr. Hunter, any comments, questions?
I would just like to add that I agree that this is at the low end of the range. I am the newest member on the board, and I'm taking account of the perspective of members who've been here a very long time and had a chance to look at this great amount of information that has to go into these decisions. So that said, I'll support the $600,000 staff recommendation, but I would also like to see an opportunity to consider how the SCP fund could be enlarged and hopefully see a little more of that money going towards programs that, as noted, are identified in the National Estuary Programs Comprehensive Management Plan, which totals, I don't know, $60 million if you got to do it all. So any additional monies that can go in that direction would be, I think, appropriate. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Villeneuve, any comments?
Yes. I concur basically with the majority of the board members that have spoken. I have a good deal of confidence in the management, our management. They've had a lot of experience also, and I think they've been very cautious and careful in staying within the boundaries of what the liability, the particular liability, the specifying the expenditures, the following the procedures. What I'm rather fearful of is that the public, and particularly a lot of the special interest groups, are beginning to see this as an opportunity to come in and lobby for expanding, just simply because it looks like a nice goodie grab bag, an opportunity to get in on some money, albeit for whatever good cause it may be. I think we need to really set some boundaries and stay within a framework that is defensible and still apply a liability which is realistic, associated with whatever the discharger has been responsible for. But I'm really getting kind of cautious about the idea that there are elements in the public that come and lobby for the most extreme assessment because they see this, for good cause, perhaps. But it's not exactly what our charge is. Our charge is to the fine should fit realistically the damage. So I agree. I think this is a particularly good example. And I really think some of the projects that are identified are also have a nexus because the discharges that are the impact. Are to the creek, although obviously it continues downstream. But the expenditures for fencing, I think, is very realistic and has a very direct nexus with the addressing that problem. That's okay. My
thank you.
Observation.
My own comments are that I feel that the amount is appropriate. I'm just very disappointed, that it's taking so long. And this has nothing to do with the you three gentlemen, that spoke. I understand you've inherited a very challenging situation, and you're trying to make the best of it. But it has been going on for quite some time. And we need to keep your institution's feet to the fire to get this corrected. The only thing we can do is the monetary penalty. $600,000 to me is a lot of money. I don't care and really how many gallons there are. That's the bar to compare it to, but it's a lot of money. I always think twice about the penalties, but I think it's appropriate after having heard Mr. Jeffrey's comments, and he's kind of the board's or the institutional memory, and invaluable in that respect, because we lose, has nothing to do with age, Mr. Jeffers. You know, some of us don't have the tenure to appreciate the longevity of some of these problems. And so I feel more comfortable with the $600,000 penalty after hearing his comments. I just hope that you folks are able to put this on the front burner and to focus your efforts. You spoke about centralizing some effort to get this resolved. Well, I hope you succeed in doing that, and that we don't have to deal with this any longer. Having said that, then, I think something about maybe how the motion... It sounds like we have the votes for the 600,000. Okay, Dr. Press.
Forgive me if I'm jumping the gun,
okay.
But... let me just state a willingness here, and here's my willingness. I understand that the discharger is in the driver's seat with respect to proposing SEPs and SEP amounts over the proposed SEP amount that has already been proposed. But let me state a willingness to have some flexibility on the timing of when the funds are disbursed, because our council has told us that we have that flexibility only on the SEP money. So in my view, the best outcome is for the discharger, I'm just expressing a preference or willingness here, for the discharger to propose boosting the SEP up to the $600,000, and understanding that there will be some flexibility. It won't be August 6th, but in effect sometime later, which we have the discretion to do, and that gives the discharger time to work with the state agencies to pull those funds together. It also would result in better environmental impact here. So that's my little pitch.
Okay, Mr. Daniels?
I was just going to float an issue that we might want to consider. There's been significant sentiment expressed here on the board that $600,000 is the low limit. One thing we could consider is a $600,000 fine plus some amount deferred, which if the appropriate things happened, would never actually get paid. But this would it would certainly encourage those things to happen. It would make the total fine, you know, look more to match some of the concerns. And I would be comfortable with that. You know, $600,000 plus some amount.
Well, that deferred. I don't know that we can do. Lori, can you comment on that?
You can increase the amount of the penalty up to the maximum amount. So I assume you mean the compliance project would be complying with the dates in the cleanup and abatement order.
Right. So I would be comfortable with, you know, a $600,000 base fine and some amount deferred based on, you know, these appropriate things occurring.
Mr. Shawcross,
In a minute.
Okay. Dr. Press?
I don't think that's necessary. I think if we just, and also to keep it simple, we impose the $600,000 penalty, let the discharger come back with their mix of SEPs and get on with it.
Mr. Daniels? Did you? Okay. Okay, fine. All right. Any other comments?
Yeah.
Oh, now you're ready.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Press on that account. I think we should keep it simple. The other thing I wanted to assure, and let's see, I have a few here. Mr.
Marshall?
No, Mr. Swanberg.
Okay.
That whether you had offered SEPs or not, it really doesn't. We don't take that into account when we come up with a reasonable penalty. So you can tell your folks who are concerned about SEPs that it would have been $600,000 whether, of course, SEPs were involved or not. I just want to.
Okay. Lori, sounds like we have a suggestion that we have a motion to accept the $600,000 penalty amount and then possibly to have this issue come back to us for discussion of the SIP and give the discharger an opportunity to weigh in on that and decide what it wants to do in that respect.
Right. The motion would be for a $600,000 penalty amount to close the hearing for all purposes other than consideration of the SEP and to continue it until staff comes back with a revised order.
Second.
Okay.
But maybe we could do it all today if the discharger...
You know, I don't think we are going to have the time. That's my concern. And they didn't want to, I think, be pushed under the gun.
I'm going to have to bet that at a higher level.
Yeah. I mean, I want them to have plenty of time to do that. It's a significant sum of money, and they got to know if and when, how they're going to get funds like that. And I want them to be able to review alternatives and feel comfortable with that. So, Mr. Shawcross?
Yeah. Would they have to come back with the whole $600, $600,000 with proposed SEPs for $600,000?
Well, if the discharger isn't willing to propose SEPs for $600,000, staff would come back with a proposed order that would have whatever SEPs the discharger agreed to and the rest in cash.
So it's a Sacramento.
Yeah, I just didn't want to. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, before you call for the question.
Yes.
I would just like to talk about the SEP. Since I qualified myself as chair of the Moss Landing Harbor, I addressed the derelict boats. But also, I think that the cost of the pump-out stations is unrealistic because I know our cost in Moss Landing, but we're probably a larger harbor than you are. And I really think that it should be considered for a longer period of time to have that continuity. But the end results is tremendous for pump-out station and removing derelict vessels.
Okay. And I do have, I want staff to know that I've got a lot of questions about the SEPs and other agencies' involvement, like state lands with these vessels. I mean, I'm deferring those questions until we get to this later. But I don't know that we should be pushing all this expense off onto this particular ACL, and I want to know where state lands is on this. I thought they had responsibility for dealing with this. So,
the derelict vessels are Department of Fish and Game's jurisdiction.
Okay. Was state lands going to do something about this, Roger, at some point, or am I
about what?
Getting my facts mixed up. Has it always been Fish and Game? Why don't you come up to the podium?
My name is Dean Heilman. I'm the patrol lieutenant for San Luis Obispo and Southern Monterey counties for the enforcement branch for the Department of Fish and Game. And I was looking forward maybe to answering some of your questions that you had regarding the Moore Bay Wildlife Area. That's the area where the derelict boats exist. We're under a contract with the State Lands Commission to manage that land. We have a contract, I think, from 1992. Where in that contract, part of the contract is that we're to address the issue of derelict boats or boats that are moored in that area. And part of that contract is that we're to take action to remove those boats. The problem is that the Department of Fish and Game has not addressed it because it's been low on the priority list in many of our other responsibilities. We have been addressing the issue in identifying some of the boats for the past 2 years. We also have statutory laws that we will be relying on to remove those boats. In other words, they are, in fact, in violation by existing there in the mooring area. And this is going to be an opportunity for us to act a little more aggressively on this issue and get those boats out of there with a plan to go ahead and do that within the time that was mentioned earlier.
Well, how much has lack of funds been the cause of the low priority rating?
The issue of vessels, as Mr. Jeffries mentioned, removing derelict vessels in which people basically have not registered them for years. They may have been sold but not registered, and not being able to determine who the owners are is one where expense becomes quite costly. And those are issues where our department has not been able to address or have the funds to deal with it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Daniels.
I wonder if we could give discretion to staff that if additional monies over the 300 were to be put to these three SEPs, that the staff could just do it and it wouldn't have to come back to us.
If the Department of Corrections is willing to settle the amount, you could delegate to the executive officer the authority to settle, including SEPs, and the settlement agreement would include a stipulated order that the board wouldn't have to adopt unless there was a violation of the settlement agreement. But if it's not a settlement, the order actually has to describe the SEPs and have specifications.
Okay.
Can we move the motion?
Yes, we can do that. I think we actually have the motion and a second.
I thought we did.
What's that?
I thought we did.
We just don't have a vote. We don't have a vote yet.
The motion doesn't include anything about delegating any settlement authority, if that's the way it's going.
So it'll have to come back to us.
Okay.
Unless you amend the motion, it should be a motion.
Well, is that what you want to do?
I would certainly feel comfortable, you know, if additional monies want to be put to these three SEPs, that staff thinks it's reasonable for staff to do it. I don't need to see it again.
Is that a motion, Mr. Daniels?
He was the maker, so.
I'll amend my motion, and I'll amend it thus. If the penalty goes to or meets the terms that counsel suggested, that is to say, is a settlement, that and then thereby permits the board to leave it up to the executive officer's discretion, that the board would do so. Because, Ms. Okin, did I understand you correctly to say that there's a particular circumstance in which we could leave it up to the executive officer's discretion, right? It depends on how the Department of Corrections settles or right? I mean, what is the exact circumstance under which we could give discretion to the executive officer?
You can grant the executive officer full discretion to settle any complaint, actually, but in this region, complaints with SEPs and complaints over $50,000 always come to the board, settlements. So in this case, what you could do is delegate the settlement authority, as long as the Department of Corrections is willing to settle for the $600,000 amount, and staff and the Department of Corrections can agree on what the appropriate SEPs should be. In that case, staff and the Department of Corrections would enter a settlement agreement, and the board wouldn't have to see it again unless the settlement agreement was violated. If they can't agree, either because the Department of Corrections wants to contest the amount or because they can't agree on what the appropriate SEPs are, then it would come back at a future meeting.
All right. Well, my amended motion would reflect just that.
All of that.
What she said.
Very profound.
But we're not settling anything. We are making a finding. Hmm.
We're going to be adopting the $600,000 penalty, and then if we have a settlement for the balance, you would be delegating that to me.
Right.
Okay.
Discretion of the executive.
Okay.
So really, the amendment is simply that if there's a settlement, we're delegating discretion to the executive officer for the terms of that settlement. Is that right?
Right. Basically, you're delegating to him the authority to settle as long as the amount is $600,000.
Okay. Well, that's my amendment.
Okay. All right. Do we have a second on that?
Second already.
Okay.
Does the recorder have that? Or is it going to have to be distilled out of the audio? There's been a lot of repartee going on, and possibly lose track of just exactly what the motion is. Could we restate it?
Well, okay, so I move that the penalty be $600,000, and that if there is a settlement, that the board delegate to the executive officer the authority to work out the terms of that settlement, provided that they are $600,000, that they amount to $600,000, period.
Excellent.
And if there's no settlement, then staff is directed to bring an order back to the board.
That's right.
Okay.
It's a little unusual. May I speak to that?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Might I suggest that the board consider adopting an ACL of $600,000, postponing the effective date of that order till the time of the next board meeting, authorizing the executive officer to negotiate with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation for SEPs up to and including the full amount of the $600,000 ACL, and if such agreement is not reached by the next board meeting, then we can come back here and discuss that. But that there be an order today that's just stayed for till the time of your next board meeting for a $600,000 ACL and be done with that aspect of it today.
Are you concerned that the clock is ticking?
I'm partially concerned that a clock is ticking and partially concerned that we may come back and remake the wheel. I mean, there really is no what I understand the full board's intention here today is to adopt staff recommendation of a $600,000 penalty amount. How much of that, in addition to the $300,000 is not coming off the table. I'm not playing any games here. I can't obligate the agency to a larger sum of money without talking to people a little higher than myself. It would be my desire to do that, I'll tell you that plainly. But I would like to at least be done with the ACL portion today so that all we're talking about is trying to work out additional monies to the SEPs and then getting that worked into a final order to be given at the time of your next board meeting.
And I think that's our understanding of
okay,
the motion.
We have
set the $600,000 okay. And we're done with that.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to be sure that was the case.
The discretion we're giving to Mr. Briggs is simply to work out the details of the SEPs.
Okay, I just heard it was like we were going to be discussing the ACL as part of the settlement, and I don't see that there's any point in trying to do that.
And my understanding would be that any problem with time frames, we would also be delegating that authority to
okay.
Mr. Briggs to do what is necessary with scheduling
okay.
time frames to work out best.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
To accommodate your schedule. Yes.
Right. And procedurally, I think what you're suggesting is simpler, but the board can't actually adopt an ACL order today because the statute says that orders are final upon issuance and need to be paid within
okay.
30 days, so you'd have to file a petition.
Right.
And so we're just keeping the hearing open, okay. and either we'll settle or they'll adopt the order at a future meeting.
Okay, understand.
Okay, let's have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Did you have a question, Doctor? Or you just okay. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously.
Mr. Chair, just
yes.
a point. I supported the $1.5 million fine, but to make this unanimous, I would be willing to go along with the recommendation of the rest of the board.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. The board is going to recess for lunch. And I think we've